Step 2. People notice only the new and then make a guess. It's impossible to transmit every single fact instantly to every person you want to reach. So marketers tell stories. Sometimes we tell stories with packaging or with advertising or with words. Sometimes we tell a story with a smile or with a sign in front of a building. Often, those stories are well-intentioned and even an attempt at communicating all the facts. But when a human being eventually confronts the idea, he will interpret it in his own way. He will lie to himself, creating a judgment without access to all the facts. The best marketing techniques, then, are the simple stories that are the most likely to break through, the most likely to be understood, and the most likely to spread. And because the rules keep changing, the tactics must change as well. I'm amazed to find myself writing this, but the purpose of this book is to persuade you to be less rational. Stop trying to find the formula that will instantly make your idea into a winner. Instead of being scientists, the best marketers are artists. They realize that whatever is being sold, a religion, a candidate, a widget, a service, is being purchased because it creates an emotional want, not because it fills a simple need. Marketers win when they understand the common threads that all successful stories share. In the legendary words of Judy Garland, "Hey kids, let's put on a show." How your brain works. If you want to tell a great story, you need to know about the brain that's going to hear that story. Whether you create a product, market a service, or run a nonprofit, you win when you spread your ideas. If your idea spreads from person to person, you'll grow in influence and everything will get easier. I call an idea that spreads an idea virus. If everyone who matters knows your idea, you win. Ideas are worthless without a place to live. An idea in a book or on a whiteboard has no impact. Just like a virus, an idea needs a host, a brain, to live in. A virus spreads to a community by jumping from host to host. When the scientists at the Centers for Disease Control try to understand a biological virus, they must first understand how the host, that's you and me, interacts with the virus. The same thing goes for an idea virus. But instead of tracking how the body reacts to a germ, we need to understand how our brain responds to the ideas and inputs we encounter. Recent research on brain function has focused on four ways we're able to deal with the significant amount of information we process every day. When we encounter something for the first time, we compare it to the status quo. If it's not new, we ignore it. Second, look for causation and coincidence. Once we decide to pay attention to something, our brain sets to work to figure out how it happened. If a window breaks, we want to see the golf ball on the floor. We instantly make up a rule or a theory about how this thing came to occur. Three, use our prediction machine. Then we make a prediction. We predict what will happen next in our world. If our prediction is right, then the external surprises will cease and our brain can settle back in and start ignoring things again. Four, rely on cognitive dissonance. Once we've made up our mind, once we've got some assumptions about causation and we've made some predictions, then we stick with them. We ignore contrary data for as long as we can get away with it and focus on the events we agree with. Let's take them one at a time, looking for a difference, the frog and the fly. A bullfrog's brain weighs about 24 grams. A human, about 60 times as much. A garden variety small frog might have a brain weighing as little as 10 grams. Clearly, humans have a significant brain power advantage over tree frogs. A surprisingly large chunk of your brain is reserved for your ability to use your eyes and to take action on what you see. Seeing is difficult, and responding quickly to what you just saw takes a disproportionate amount of brain tissue. Despite the substantial evolutionary investment in human brain power, despite the vast number of brain cells devoted to our eyes and our ability to process what we see, most people are unable to snatch a housefly out of midair, with or without their tongue. The fly is too fast, and you are just too slow. Yet frogs do this every day. How do frogs get by with so little? How can a frog, with its minuscule brain, find a fly, track it, aim its tongue, launch it, and then capture the fly in less than a second? The frog has optimized its brain for hunting flies. It turns out that a frog is unable to see anything that is motionless. A frog surrounded by recently killed bugs will starve to death, unaware that there's plenty of nutrition just inches away. At the same time, a frog can grab a fly out of the air with its tongue far faster than any person can. The frog's secret? It watches only for changes in the environment. It has a brain that can only do one thing well, and that's watch the sky for moving bugs. By ignoring the static environment and only focusing on what's new, it can be far more efficient than a human when it comes to catching flies. Humans use the same strategy far more often than we realize. Not to catch flies, of course, but to keep up with the huge influx of data we wrestle with every day. Have you ever caught your car odometer flipping from 999 to 1,000? You may not remember ever having looked at your odometer before, but somehow, by strange coincidence, you catch it during the big change. Obviously, it's not a coincidence at all. We're constantly scanning the world around us for changes. Walk into your house and within a heartbeat, you know if something has changed. You glance at your watch a dozen times in a row without consciously knowing what time it is. Until you discover you're late for something, and then the data jumps to the forefront of your awareness. Yes, we're just like frogs. We notice changes most of all. No, we can't grab a fly, but we can tell at a glance if there's a new brand of beer at the market or if the mailman got a haircut. Look for causation, the case of the broken iPods. Everything happens for a reason, doesn't it? Even if you don't consciously agree with that statement, your brain sure does. The ability to refine our superstitions